Welcome to the 22nd episode of Egg Timer Philosophy, a podcast where philosophical ideas are scrambled up in about 5 minutes. Today's episode will focus on the question of how to handle objectionable or even hate speech in a free society. Should such speech be banned or limited, or should it face little or no government restriction? This is a very big question, and a good place to start looking for a possible answer can be found in the writings of John Stuart Mill. Now, the second episode of Egg Timer took a look at Mill's notion of the harm principle. So if the ideas in this episode interest you, then you might go back to the catalog and listen to that episode as well. So writing in his 1851 classic work, On Liberty, Mill suggests that the best way for a free society to deal with objectionable speech, speech we could even label as hate speech today, is to allow these ideas to be out in the open as much as possible. Mill thinks that it's a mistake to bar such speech from our public discourse. Now, Mill offers a number of reasons for this stance, and while each is plausible, each of his reasons also faces strong objection. So let's take a look at his reasoning. Mill compares speech to economic activity in a type of free marketplace model. In a free economic marketplace, the best goods and services will generally rise to the top. You can allow inferior products or products that someone is trying to sell for more than they're worth into the market, but those products will lose out to better products. And allowing those products, the inferior products, into the market won't destroy the market. The market will destroy them. Mill maintained that ideas work in a similar way. In a free society, you can have inferior and ridiculous ideas circulated, but they will simply get outcompeted by better ideas. So later in the 20th century, the U.S. Supreme Court ran with Mill's comparisons of ideas to a free market, to a free economic market, and we see justices like Holmes and Douglas in particular use the phrase, the marketplace of ideas, to justify the stance that the government should not bar or censor things like hate speech. The comparison of speech to economic goods might in some ways fall flat, though. When a person buys something, they generally do so because it's useful to them. So well-made blenders will outcompete poorly made blenders. But the problem here is that in a purely pragmatic way, many people might see ideas found in various types of things like hate speech as useful for them. It's easy to see when a blender you buy is not useful. It can be much more difficult to see when an idea you've heard, and now that you might believe, is not useful for you. Mill also suggested that censoring objectionable ideas won't prevent the ideas from occurring or even spreading in a society. Instead, it will just drive them underground. And the ideas are actually more dangerous when they're censored and driven underground, because there is no adversarial public discourse to show how silly those ideas might be. The idea is that censorship doesn't destroy ridiculous ideas, such as the belief that women are inferior to men or that there's some grand Jewish conspiracy to control the world. Instead, censorship creates a type of underground economy of ideas where these ridiculous and false beliefs, to be sure, become even stronger and gain even more traction, making them even more dangerous. Forcing hate speech through censorship into the dark under corners of society, for Mill, only makes the problem worse, not better. Mill's anti-censorship position depends upon a robust public discourse, where false, ridiculous, and even harmful beliefs can be taken to task and fended off. But unfortunately, history has shown that in many cases, the needed robust public discourse to make the marketplace of ideas function is lacking, to say the least. This is especially true in times of crisis, where demonization or scapegoating of the other can run rampant. What we see within crisis is not some orderly marketplace of ideas where the better ideas win out, but instead, what we see is more like a knockdown, drag-out fight to see who can get to the bank first before it runs out of money. There are many examples of this type of thing since Mill published his work in the mid-19th century, but perhaps none as stark as the spread and rise of Nazism in post-World War I Europe. This is far from the only example here, but obviously it's a really important one. Another contemporary issue here to consider is the proliferation of the internet as a source of people's beliefs. Deep fakes now exist which seem every bit as real as real images. They can be so convincing that one can't be blamed for thinking that they're real when in fact they're just manipulated images. But if those manipulated images are convincing enough, it seems naive to think the public discourse will simply find a way to mitigate their potential for real and lasting social and political damage. Mill can't be blamed for failing to take things like deepfakes into account when he was writing about this issue 170 years ago. But even though we can't blame Mill for this, it seems like it might imply a strenuous revision to his ideas. Perhaps the best way to end this egg timer is by considering that Mill's marketplace of ideas can offer us an aspirational goal for the societies that we want to live in and the world we wish to have. The idea leaves us with the question, how can we create a world where public discourse is strong enough to cast out the ideas that threaten all of us? Until next time on Egg Timer Philosophy, wishing you good philosophical vibes.